This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Ready for an awesome episode? Well, so are we. But you know what? Before we get to it, I got to tell you that members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. Bam! Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as our friends at Navy Federal do. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. And then how many certificates do this? You can then add money at any time and watch your savings grow. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval.
Me fail English? That's impossible.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and... Wait, Joe's not here. Where is he? Oh, yeah. My bad. I forgot. Today, Joe's live on the floor of the Podcast Movement Conference. Joe's mom told Joe to get out of the basement and go make some new friends, so I let him borrow the old El Camino, and he drove it down the road to pick up some special guests for a very special roundtable. Today, we welcome the co-host of Bigger Pockets Money, Mindy Jensen, plus the creator of My Millennial Money, Glenn James. And last but not least, the host of the Military Money Show, my favorite, Lacey Langford. And now, live from Orlando, Florida, here he comes, Joe Salsiha.
And welcome to our very special Podcast Movement 2019 show. Every year I like to do this. How long has it been? Maybe this is year number five, maybe even six, that we have done a live show. Of course, not only do we have a lot of podcasters from the FinCon Nerd Table that are here, there are podcasters all over the place. I'm recording this right now from my hotel room at the Conference Hotel in Orlando, because why wouldn't you have a conference in Orlando, Florida? In fact, Guy Raz from the show How I Built This was there, and he said a conference in Orlando in August. Of course, that means that the next Podcast Movement is going to be in Winnipeg in February. So, because of course, that's exactly what you do. Hey, today's show is brought to you by AcreTrader. Thanks to AcreTrader for supporting Stacking Benjamins. For more information on how to become a farmland investor through AcreTrader, head to acretrader.com/SB. We'll talk about them a little bit more in the middle of the show. But for now, let's head down to the floor of Podcast Movement, where we're gathering this year's panel to talk about what are listeners worried about? What types of things are these different communities writing podcasters about? Let's get the heartbeat from the FinCon booth at Podcast Movement Central right now. And we are here live from the floor of Podcast Movement 2019. And I'm so excited. Like every year, I think this is the fifth year in a row, we've done a roundtable live from Podcast Movement. And you know what Podcast Movement means? We have financial nerd podcasters with us. Some of my favorite people. Let's start with from the Military Money Show. My good friend Lacey Langford's here.
Thank you for having me. This is my first one.
Your first roundtable?
My first roundtable and my first Podcast Movement.
What do you think about Podcast Movement so far?
It's legit. I've had a lot of great sessions that I've gone to and met a lot of cool people, and it's got a good vibe going.
Well, speaking of good vibe, your show's got a very good vibe. So tell everybody about the Military Money Show.
Yes, it's a podcast helping everybody in the military community, military spouses, service members, and veterans how to make, save, or invest money wisely.
And not her first podcast movement, and not her first time on this roundtable. She was here last year on this podcast movement roundtable. It's our good friend Mindy Jensen from Bigger Pockets Money.
Thanks for having me, Joe, and thanks for letting me come back. I really enjoy talking to you all the time.
I thought we'd podcast and chill. Sorry.
Maybe later, Joe.
Take that out, Steve. Sorry.
Don't take that out. That's hilarious. That'll lead into the end.
I know.
There's a hashtag me too waiting to happen.
Yes, there might be a story behind that, guys. So Mindy, for the three people who don't know about the Bigger Pockets Money Show, what do you and Scott do?
Scott and I interview people who either have a really interesting money story on their journey to financial independence, or we interview somebody who has a tip or trick for somebody who is listening who is on their journey to financial independence.
And you guys do something really cool. You not only have a lot of fun, you guys go pretty in-depth with your guests, too.
Yeah, we want to get their money background, and then we want to see what they're doing now to, you know, further themselves down the path and finally reach financial independence so they can live the life that they want.
I really felt like when I was a guest on your show, Scott was trying to make me cry. Is that true? Is that what he's trying to do?
No, Scott loves you.
Well, I love Scott too, but that's a whole different show. And a guy who came halfway around the world to be on this podcast from My Millennial Money, all the way from Australia. It's our good friend, Glenn James.
G'day, how are you?
Nice. Lay it on, brother. Lay it on.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I'm glad you could do it. So tell everybody about your show.
Yeah, so I wanted to create a podcast about personal finance that made money fun and engaging and not boring. There is so much need for financial literacy, help, encouragement in everybody's lives. Yeah. And I thought the best shot I've got is getting in young millennials before they set the bad habits and to try and correct the course and encourage people along the way.
Now, you and I were having a discussion in an Uber yesterday. You were telling me that podcasting isn't like we see here, where we've got Spotify right across from us, we've got Google there. It's much more in its infancy in Australia.
Yeah, so podcasting, it has been around for a few years in Australia, but you really had to be, you know, a podcast freak, I call them. Like, you've really got to be over it. But it is now moving into mainstream. All the big outlets, media outlets, are getting into podcasting. All the big TV shows are doing spin-off podcasts. It's just the start of something big in Australia. And this is why I come up to Podcast Movement and FinCon, is because we just don't have that community down there. And like I like to say, I like to get off the island to get some encouragement.
That's an awfully big island.
It's a big island. It's about the size of your landmass.
About the size, yeah, that's right. Are you talking about me personally?
Yeah.
Was that a bad joke?
Yeah.
Is that what you're doing here?
Anyway.
Like, very awkward.
Yeah.
You've only been here like 5 minutes and already, no.
I'm behaving.
That's you are. I'm so surprised. That's not like Lacey. But let's stick with you, Lacey. So what I like to do here every year, guys, is because we have lots of different points of view, lots of different shows here represented, I'd like to talk about your audience and do the annual podcast movement checkup on what are people worried about? Because I found the last 5 years we've done this, people are worried about different things as the economy changes. So Lacey, we'll start with you. What kind of feedback are you getting from your audience about their money concerns?
I think for the military community, a big concern is finding financial stability because of the constant moving, the transitions, whether it be they're moving to a new duty station, they're deploying to the Middle East, they're going to schools. This constant moving is, one, confusing to their finances, but also it impacts their spouse's employment. So that's another issue, is their un and underemployment within the spouse community, which impacts their overall financial wellness as the family. So I think that is something that's top of mind for them, is a way to kind of identify it and fix that problem and keep it the same, because it's not going to go away. It's going to continue to happen.
I saw that not just in the military community, but also now in the larger world, that the average person I was reading last week is going to have 7 jobs during their career. And clearly, I think of something, Mindy, you're laughing, but I think of something like buying a house like buying a house isn't what it used to be, where you're going to buy a house to live in and live there for 30 years, there's a good chance you're not going to be in the same community very long.
That is a true statement. I personally don't live in a house for more than 5 years in my whole life. I was not a military brat. I was a corporate brat, but...
You got a suitcase next to the bed?
Yeah, just about. I've moved every 2 to 3 years for the last, I don't know, 20.
Not sure if this marriage thing with Mr. 1500 is going to work.
No, is he comes with me.
That's good. But you've had how many houses?
We live in flip. When we are buying a house, we look for a really ugly house. We move in, we make it look better, and then we sell it. So we've had 8, 9 houses since we've been married for almost 18 years.
Has it always been profitable, the flip?
It has always been profitable, just a couple of them have not been as profitable as I had hoped.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I want to ask if that's a U.S. trend, Glenn, or is that also the trend in Australia where there's no more 30 and out people having a much, much shorter career span? It's more becoming brand new.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about the home ownership with the correlation between employment. One of the big questions we get asked from young millennials is, they've got so much pressure from their parents to buy a house, get established, blah, 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 where the reality is it's a different world than the boomers. Are you a boomer?
No.
No, you're ex.
Easy.
Hey.
Dude, fat joke and then old guy.
So my listeners, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of pressure to do what a previous generation has done, and that's just not where the world is right now. So we're having the discussions all the time, and the term in Australia is called rent vest. So we rent somewhere and do our investing elsewhere to grow our wealth. And in terms of the flipping the property, we just can't do that because of the cost of property. I mean, an entry-level home in suburbia would be $450,000 Australian.
The math doesn't work as well.
Yeah, it's just, it's too heavy to carry.
Yeah, that's interesting. I want to go back, Lacey, to the second thing you said, which was about the spouse, because we often think about the person who's in the military. But the spouse keeping a job when they're moving from place to place and don't know when they're going to move again next, that's a huge problem I hadn't considered.
Yes, it causes a lot of marital stress, also financial stress, and it also impacts the service member's career. Because if your spouse is not happy that they're moving all the time and they can't have a job or make the money that they want, they're not going to want you to stay in the military. So it's really Department of Defense-wide important for it to be solved, because it's going to affect retention for the military.
A lot of people want to be entrepreneurial. Does that mean the military spouse probably should be entrepreneurial so they can work from anywhere?
Yes, that's actually how my business started. I wanted to be a financial planner. I wanted to help people with their money. But when your husband's gone for a year, every other year, I just couldn't have that type of employment that I wanted. And so I created a business that was PCS proof or portable that I could take with me. And that is a big driver now, is military spouses and also service members are moving into entrepreneurship because it really works well with their military life.
Do you get much, Mindy, of a drive toward entrepreneurship, letters from your following?
I get a lot of people who are excited to become financially independent so they can start a business where they don't have to rely on the income at first, because, you know, when it can be really scary to start your own company. Oh, I couldn't do that. I can't pay my mortgage. Well, now that I'm financially independent, I don't have to worry about the money, so I can follow my passion. And that, I think that makes you a better entrepreneur when you're doing something that you love.
Yeah.
Just because you love it.
Do you find them starting it now, or are they waiting till they're financially independent to start it?
I find a lot of people are waiting until they're more closer. Until they be more closer. Yes, yeah. Thank you, Joe, for bringing out the English lover in me.
This show is sponsored by Grammarly. Yeah. God, I hope so. I so hope so.
Fingers crossed.
If they're not, they're doing it now. The closer you are to financial independence, the easier it is for you to start a company. Oh, okay, well, I'm not quite to my number, but I'm really close. And I hate my job, or I've really burnt out of my position or whatever. So it's the closer you are, the easier it is, but you don't have to wait until you're all the way financially independent.
But that's an interesting vein to explore, because part of me says you should start earlier and get the groundwork laid, right? Get all the foundation in place. But then I also think, on the other hand, how many times have you seen somebody do that where they start a business they don't have time for, and by the time they do get time, they started it so long ago, the passion's completely gone. Like, oh, I don't care anymore. Like, is it, which one do you do, the chicken or the egg?
you know, there's a lot of things you can do in the beginning that won't change your passion for it. Like laying the groundwork, getting an LLC, starting the website and, you know, doing all of that kind of stuff. Don't work 40 hours a week at your day job and then come and put in 80 hours a week at your passion project, because very quickly your passion project is going to turn into a slog. You know, get the groundwork started and do the little things that you can do, but don't go whole hog until you're, you know, a lot closer to actually being able to go whole hog. That's my own personal.
Yeah. And I think it's sometimes people struggle with this. I'm really good at this, but I love that, so I want to do that. I say to people, do what you're really good at and make that fun and engaging. Because if you do something you're really good at, see, I'm really good at, I don't know, doing an online blog, for example. I love horse riding, but I can't make a business out of horse riding. So it's, so I think we need to just, if you are looking at that transitional side hustle, there's so much stuff that you can do today that won't cost money in preparation.
Write an online blog about horse riding.
Oh.
Ooh, now you've married your passion exactly. with what you're good at.
Yeah. Drop the. We need to drop this mic. Hold on.
Yeah.
We're going to.
It's expensive, so be careful.
That is, yeah. Yeah. Sorry, Justin. Didn't mean to joke about the mic.
Drop the mic.
He's like, do not touch the mic.
He's like, stay away from the mic. Yes, we're using the FinCon booth equipment here at Podcast Movement, and Justin is looking at us very suspiciously as we look at him and we're laughing. On that note, you speak to a millennial audience. How many people are writing you about entrepreneurship?
Yeah, a lot are. But even before the discussion about the entrepreneurship, there's so much confusion and noise. So if you're a 24-year-old person, you've left school, you've been to university, you're now in a job that you hate, and you have a student loan, for example. It's really hard to then start the entrepreneurship when you've got the bills and you may have started a young family or whatnot. So I'm actually trying to encourage people now with the entrepreneurship. Hey, when you leave school, just do nothing for a couple of years. Go and work at a bar, go work at a coffee, go travel. Because what's happened with, and it's probably the same in American culture, society has moved 10 years. So for example, 30, 40 years ago, 65 years old was bloody old, okay? But now, 55 is the new 45.
I thought you were saying now 55 is bloody old. I'm like, no, dude, no. Three times.
I'm giving you a bone here. So basically, the thing is, you've now got 30-year-olds living at home with mummy and daddy still. So everything's moved 10 years. 65 is now the lifestyle years. It's no longer retirement. So I'm okay to tell people to leave school, chill out, eat, pray, love, whatever, as long as you don't get pregnant, get someone else pregnant, go to jail, or get on drugs, you'll have a good shot of finding your passion and doing it. And technology has made it so cheap to get started with a low barrier of entry.
Dude, you just took the fun out of everything.
I know.
Sorry.
Don't do any of those.
And good night.
Mindy.
Joe.
What's your audience really worried about?
My audience is worried about a pending recession. Everybody's talking, oh, there's a bubble. But if you look at the cycles, we are, you know, about here, which works great for radio, the video part, I call this radio. Look at how
about,
old I am.
About here or here? Yes. That's okay. We always say we're taping a podcast.
Yes, we are.
It's like scotch taping a podcast? What are you talking about?
Do you record it on a record?
That's right. Yeah.
Okay, so in the waves, we're near the top of the cycle, which means that we are going to go down the hill. If you look at the indicators, like how long we have been in this upward motion, and I'm not predicting a recession, but you know, all the indicators are there that we're about at the end of this cycle. So,
but the funny thing is, so we do financial headlines. We had financial headlines 4 years ago that said that we were at the end of the cycle.
Yes, which is why I cannot wait for 4 years from now when we're still at the top of the cycle for people to be like, oh, remember when you said this was going to happen 4 years ago? I'm not predicting one, but yes. I'm just saying all
but
these
that's what everybody's worried
there,
about.
And that's what everybody's worried about. Just, I mean, I hope we're all wrong, sort of, but I kind of hope we're all right because all these housing prices are going crazy and I'd like a bargain.
That's interesting. I want to talk about that, but I first want to talk about just this phenomenon because I don't think it's just the indicators. I think it's the financial media. Like in the papers here, Glenn, all I see is
all I see is Gloom and Doom's around the corner. And it's so easy to write that now because the expansion's been so long. Do you guys have the same?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, at the time of this recording, we've had 2 days of 2% loss on our market. So yeah. It is real. And it's funny, I don't know, like in my, because I'm a financial advisor by trade, for want of a better word, I've never timed the market with my clients. It's a buy and hold and, you know, we don't react. But I wonder, like in the States, if it is as bad as what, you know, the media says, are we selling down half of our portfolio to cash and just hedging our own bet?
But the funny thing is, if you did that 4 years ago, like our friend who's said it a million times that he did it, Len Penzo on our show on Friday, has a wonderful blog. Our longtime listeners know Len. Len is like, man, I messed up. Because 4 years ago, there were all these indicators.
Yeah.
And he's lost a huge upswing in the last 4 years.
Yeah. And I think that's why you just do not look at your portfolio, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe once a year, have a peek.
That's funny. Craig, I was at work the other day, and Craig said, I said, oh, did you see the Dow was down 1,000 points yesterday? He's like, no, I don't watch it. I didn't look at it. I'm like, that's brilliant. Who was it? I don't remember who said the people who have the best returns on the stock market are the dead people.
Yes.
Who have like never touched their...
Yeah, Fidelity
said that.
Fidelity showed that with their 401k accounts.
Yeah.
Yeah, dead people do the best because they don't touch their money. Like when the beneficiary never comes to claim the money.
Well, like I tell a lot of people, if your financial planning strategy is boring, it's the most amazing strategy you've got.
Yeah.
Because you've removed yourself and your own poor behaviors from it.
That's got to create for your audience, Lacey, in the military, I think they already have this location anxiety. I mean, now you get a bumpy stock market or the threat of a bumpy stock market that makes people even more wary.
Yes. And I think a lot of times they go into panic mode, which is unfortunate. But a lot of them are coming in at 18 years old. Hopefully they've started off right doing the thrift savings plan, which is the Department of Defense 401k. But they get a little big for their britches sometimes with a stable income. And that can, you know, think, oh, well, I'll just go ahead and tweak it here a little bit. I'll tweak it here a little bit. And a lot of times, too, when they're changing jobs or get promoted, there's already that feeling that they should do something, change something when they shouldn't. They should probably just leave it. And when you throw kind of the market and then the, you know, Chicken Little, the sky is falling in there, then there starts to be extra panic in there. So, unfortunately, a lot of people do make mistakes and you should just kind of set it and forget it sometimes. Not forget it, but...
A lot of your younger military listeners, because I know in Australia, for those listening, if you go out on deployment, you basically print money because you might be on a boat or a base and you might get an extra 90 grand a year that you can't spend because you're not doing anything. Have you got a lot of listeners that are cashed up, or like where is that at in the States here?
Yes, they are definitely cashed up when they are on those deployments or away. But unfortunately, I call it this I deserve it game is a pattern that I see constantly with service members and their spouses. So if you're the service member and you're gone for a year, you're like, I deserve a Dodge Charger when I get back.
Yeah.
You know, that's something I really deserve. And then the spouses at home, well, I deserve a really great trip when you come home because I've been stuck with the kids. So they do, they're building up probably $50,000 sometimes in that year. And instead of putting it into investments, unfortunately, they're earmarking it for a good time when they get back.
Yeah, I don't think that's military only, though, because I see that with people that keep bad budgets. I mean, seriously, they're like, okay, I got to get tight with my budget. They're tight with their budget for 2 months. And they're like, you know what? We did great for 2 months. Let's buy a big screen TV because we deserve it. And then they buy it on credit and it all starts again. So maybe same thing.
No, I was going to say that it's a good point that it's not specific to the military, but it is a game. And if you both aren't on the same page, it's going to have a bigger financial impact too if you do it that way.
Sure.
I think the biggest risk to one's financial life outside of the economy is your own personal lifestyle inflation. Like it's, you might not be in the military listening right now, but you might have had a pay rise over the last 10 years. Like the cost for you to exist each year shouldn't be rapidly increasing once you get to a critical mass of earnings. So I think that's the deadly sleeper in someone's life. And that's that lifestyle inflation.
You're getting people's stories, Mindy, all the time. Every show, you've got a different person's story. How often is this stuff that we're talking about right now part of the story? I thought that I deserved it, so I went and bought something I couldn't afford, created this cascading problem, yada, yada, yada.
I think we're on episode 84, so 84 times.
Every time.
Every, not every time, but just about every time. There's been a couple of people who were like, oh, I've been great with money forever. And that's awesome. It's nice to share that story, too.
Yeah, but I hate those people.
Well, okay. I'm sorry, Joe, that you're such a mean person. I'm more accepting, clearly. But yeah, no, that is very
no judgment.
Prevalent. And frankly, when we have four questions we ask at the end of every show, what was your biggest money mistake is one of them. And I don't know, 60, 70, 90, 112% of the time they say it was because I bought a car. I bought a brand new car.
Yes.
And I didn't pay cash for it. I financed it at, you know, an interest rate. I bought a brand new car in 2010 and I financed it at an interest rate of 0%. He's like, how much do you want to put down? As little as possible, because it's a 0% loan.
Yeah.
But I shouldn't have bought the brand new car. It was a silly purchase.
But isn't it free money?
Well, it was a free loan.
Yes. It's free. Ta-da.
Yeah.
It's magic.
Yeah. We just make it up in the back end because you paid $5,000 more for the car.
That's right. That's right. Working with millennials.
Yeah.
You see that millennials do so, we do so many stories to show millennials doing so many things right with their money. Doing so many things right. And yet this idea of I deserve it is something that we often hear as part of the millennial story, right? It's the knock on millennials you always hear. In real life, with your practice and with your listeners, how much do you see that?
I think there's broadly three categories. You know, you're terrible with money, you're getting by, or you're killing it. And that kind of behavior happens throughout every person. Like, it's the common denominator. Like, we're all humans with behavior. But the big thing that I see with the millennials, some of them, it's not that, and maybe it is that I deserve it, but they'll write into the podcast and say, oh, I want to buy a house, I want to buy a car, we've got 10 grand in debt, we've got a wedding next June, we've got this. They want to do 50 things at once.
Yeah.
And it's just, as Homer Simpson would say, impossible. So
that's actually Ralph Wiggin, but anyway.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I know, but bring the right Simpsons reference.
Sorry. We only just got the Simpsons on the island. So.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Yeah, so, oh, yeah, me fail English. That's
yes,
impossible.
That's right.
Yeah, Ralph, yeah. So I think it's just setting expectations that you may have grown up with your tablet and clicking everything, I'll get it at once, I'll do this, do that. It doesn't translate to real life. I interviewed a young lady the other day. She was only 21 years old and she already had $30,000 of personal loan debt, payday loans. And it wasn't I purchased a new car, I purchased a new lounge. It was just a symptom of poor management and looking at the now and not the future. And she literally just systematically spent more than what she earned and it finally caught up with her.
Yeah. Becomes a slippery slope and then all of a sudden you're riding downhill really fast.
So all that to say, I would definitely say pick your battles. Like, you can realistically, and there's some things like yourself and your listeners, they might be, and me personally, I don't save for 15 things at once. I hit one thing, hit it, move on. I'd recommend that. And if you've got a spouse, both write a list of the three things, order them in priority, and then, okay, it's your turn for that goal. Now it's my turn. And it's a bit of a team effort.
It's funny what a great message that is. We heard that yesterday too from, I don't know if you were in the, were you in the keynote speakers yesterday?
No, I had a meeting, yeah.
Patrice Washington said that very thing.
Really?
Which Patrice Washington, a phenomenal podcast about the soul of money, I guess, and financial wellness, much more than the numbers. Patrice, though, said, don't do 1,000 things one time or 1,000,000 things one time. Do one thing 1,000,000 times. Which I think is such a better way to go. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
Stock market. You brought up we're at the top of the stock market.
I did not say we're at the top.
You said that your listeners are worried that we're at the top.
I said that we are worried about a
recession.
A recession.
Yes.
Because all of the indicators are showing that we are near the top.
Yes. Nice. Thank you.
Yes.
Glad we got that
for the clarification. Remind me never to do that again.
got tense for a moment there.
Mindy said there was going to be a crash.
Tomorrow. And it didn't happen. But we have had 2 days of wiggliness, to put it not very bluntly, but much more fun than it really is the last couple days as we record this. Maybe by the time this comes out, it's worse. Maybe it's better. We don't know. Lacey, are you worried?
No. I'm not the kind type the person to panic.
No?
Yeah, I think you have to keep a level head. That's just like...
I don't want to run around like this guy is falling. I think, you know, I have systems in place and prepare and have a financial fallback position. And I know my goals. So when it gets a little near change, then I kind of look to what is most important to me.
Mindy, you're in the real estate universe. This is what worries me about recessions in real estate. As you know, a lot of people in real estate use leverage. Because they use leverage, that makes a lot of vocal winners when things go well. Everybody's like, do real estate because it rocks because you can leverage your money. Real estate also flushes the toilet really hard when the market goes bad, right?
If it doesn't, real estate always go up.
Yes. Up yeah. to the right. Can you please make that the pullout quote so I can tweet that? Real estate flushes the toilet.
But you know it does. 2007, 2008,
it does.
I mean, so many nice people with Patrice. We're just talking about Patrice. I mean, she lost her home. So are you worried from that perspective?
I am not personally worried for my own interests because I don't leverage myself to the hilt. I leverage myself enough where I can use the leverage as, you know, an actual tool, but not so that I can't sleep at night. There are people who will leverage as much as they can, pull out a second mortgage, and they have everything riding on this house. If you don't have a backup plan, you are going to have a disaster. And when you have a backup plan, you might never need to tap into it, but it's nice that it's there. And I think that when the sky is falling, the problems that you experience are inversely proportionate to how much money you have in the bank. You have a lot of money in the bank. You have like a half a week with vacancy. You have no money in the bank. Everybody leaves your house. They trash them. And then you can't find anybody else. So you're just scrambling to pay your mortgage. If you can't afford a rental for at least 6 months with no renter, you have no business owning that rental.
That being unprepared causes panic.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, it just reminds me of something a friend told me when you're talking about how bad things happen when you're unprepared. I find that whenever I'm late, that's the time when everybody drives really slow. And then my friend Hal back in Texarkana told me, he said, that's not the case at all. The only time you're paying attention is when you're late. So then you think everybody's driving slow. So the bad things happen to us all the time. But if we're prepared, it just kind of is like water under, who cares? But to your point, you're not prepared. All of a sudden it feels like the world comes caving down.
Yeah. And you have to make snap decisions when you're not prepared. When you have like, oh, I'm going to lose my house, I'll just sell it. But you have to sell it at a loss because you have to sell it right away. And it's just, it's this like never-ending cycle of bad decisions once you, you know, aren't prepared to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just that compounding negative effect, isn't it?
Reinforcement.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
yeah. No trivia from Doug today. And we are recording this from the basement separately because OG has a cautionary tale leading into Labor Day. We'll take you back to the floor podcast movement here in just a couple minutes. But OG, last year, your party didn't go the way that you hoped it would. You thought that all the frugal people, all of our frugal fire friends would come out if you organized the party correctly.
Right. The thing is that it was kind of my first time, and because I am not generally the frugal guy, so
right,
you know, we're usually highfalutin water slides and that sort of stuff.
If you're trying to fit in with the fire crowd.
But yeah, I wanted to be one with the people.
Sure. Yes. I thought you made a lot of great gestures to reach out to the community. Generally wasn't accepted. And well, let's go through these. We got the top five here.
Mm-hmm. Number five.
Yeah, apparently when you use quotation marks to describe chicken, people see right through that. I mean, it really wasn't chicken. It was chicken.
Yeah, I did.
Quotation marks.
I did. I was surprised that was pretty much everybody. Nobody wanted your main course.
I didn't know that you're supposed to take the skin off the squirrel. I've never cooked it before, but my dad said it tasted like chicken, so that's what I went with. And it was a lot easier to get because they're just out on the road. In random places.
An armadillo.
You're not supposed to eat those. Everybody knows that.
Oh. that was my mistake.
Number four.
So I thought that BYOB meant you are in charge of bringing the barbecue. The actual grill. So it was a little awkward when no one brought that. I figured if I put it on every invitation, then everybody would bring some sort of grilling device. No one brought one at all. So we just had lots of beer.
Lots and lots of beer. And that was so frustrating because, I thought that
it's hard to cook chicken if nobody brings a barbecue.
If you're trying to be frugal, BYOB is bring your own barbecue. Or your own cheese sandwich.
Cheese sandwich.
You know that's borderline child abuse.
It is.
Yes.
Borderline.
Number three.
I was harking back to my earlier days of having to start fires in the woods without any equipment whatsoever. So I was thinking about how to be ultra conservative with our budget and not needlessly spend on things that were terribly unnecessary, like matches, because they're so expensive. The per unit cost in those things are ridiculous at Costco. So I thought about trying to start a fire with that magnesium stick. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It didn't.
It took
YouTube videos make it look a lot easier than it actually is.
Well, and then when you brought out the magnifying glass later
we didn't have any fire.
Newspaper.
We didn't have fire. We didn't have a barbecue. And all we had was chicken.
Just a bunch of dead squirrels.
So far.
Laying next to the grill and crap loads of beer.
But there wasn't a grill. They're all lined up like on the patio.
No, you're right.
Because you were going to be able to pick your own. It was going to be one of those.
Like a fire party Brazilian steakhouse.
Yeah, but all you get is chicken.
Just chicken. Yes. Yeah. Would you care for more chicken? Turn it over to red.
Good.
I just keep it on red the whole time, not putting it on green. Let's talk about the games you played, because you then tried to play a game with all these drunk people and that went south.
Number two.
So on the game front, I thought it would be helpful to combine activities that help, you know, everybody. In this case, it would help me. Because I recently fired my lawn crew because it's super expensive. And I was trying to be, again, more conscious about how I spent money. So it had been a long time since we mowed the grass or planted flowers. And so one of the games, again, air quotes, that we were going to play was called Get the Weed from My Garden. It wasn't exactly what everybody thought.
Yeah, they kind of misinterpreted that. Everybody went crazy at first.
Yeah, it was going to be the highlight for me. It was the highlight of what was going to happen because then it meant I didn't have to do it. But everybody else thought it was going to be their highlight. And then it wasn't, because when I started handing out, like, you know, yard gloves, which weren't really gloves, they're like those plastic ones that you can get in bulk, you know?
Yeah. When people are yelling, where's the paper? And you're handing out yard gloves.
Yeah. I'm like, no, we have to pull weeds.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
And then the number one reason your first attempt at a fire Labor Day party went south.
Number one.
Again, just trying to save money and do this the right way. We were, again, walking through Costco and saw that they had wine for $10 a bottle, which is ridiculous. So I decided to buy one of those normal size boxes of, when you go to Costco, they give you a box. I just filled it with all the grapes they had. And I thought that we could just make our own wine. And so I put it all, like I had like a swimming tub, like a kid's swimming pool, and those plastic ones. I put all the grapes in there. At first, people thought it was just kind of a really large fruit bowl that only had grapes.
And I could see their point.
Right.
Like, what the hell are all these grapes doing there?
Yeah. I mean, it was just full of like a kid's swimming pool. And then I took my shoes off and said, come on, guys. Let's make some wine. And it was pretty awkward 6 minutes, I'd say, where I was kind of dancing around and most people were pretty disappointed that there wasn't any real wine.
Well, and apparently you thought that would, like, once you squeezed it out there, that would make wine right away. And according to Dave Falchuk, it takes a little longer.
Yeah, it was pretty frustrating. I mean, it also would have helped to not have everybody put their feed in it because nobody really wanted to drink it after.
Especially after the weed incident, yeah. The flower.
I mean, there's just a lot of feet. I mean, even if we would have been successful in making all of that into wine, I'm pretty sure nobody would have wanted to drink it. It would have been like,
isn't that like one of the top Bordeaux wines though, Chateau Lafite? I thought that's how they...
That's exactly what that is. That's what I was going for, actually.
That's how they do it, yeah. Mm. Chateau La OG Feet.
It's delicious. The 2018 vintage.
Yeah, cautionary tale, people. Cautionary tale. All right. Today's episode, by the way, brought to you by Acre Trader. Acre Trader is the place if you want to grow grapes in a field, or if you know a farmer who grows grapes in a field. You don't do any of the growing. You are not the farmer. You just own some of the land. What happens at Acre Trader is they take this field that you can't afford to buy on your own. Instead, they divide it into little pieces and you own a little piece of the field. The great thing about Acre Trader is they deal with the farmer, they collect the rent, and as the landlord, all you have to do is collect the rent. They also deal with the farmer to make sure the soil stays sustainable, and they work with making sure that the field is always rented. So once again, you don't have to be a farmer. You're just a landlord. And if you look historically at farmland, the reason why so many institutional investors have gotten into this in the last 10 years is because of the fact that it's an incredibly boring investment. Farmland's going away at a rapid rate. And because of that, and because of the fact that it works a lot differently and systematically than either residential real estate or commercial real estate, there hasn't been historically as much fluctuation. You still want to look into it. You still want to do your homework. But if you're like me and you're somebody who grew up in farm territory, I think you understand where I'm coming from, that for the right investor, this might be the boring investment for your portfolio. Two things. Number one, you have to be an accredited investor to get in. That's a different show. So go look up accredited investor to see if that's you. And then number two is, remember, you're buying part of a field. So this is money that's going to be locked up until Acre Trader sells that field at a date in the future. So all of that stuff means do your homework ahead of time. Here's where you go to tell them that we set you. Head to acretrader.com/SB. That's acretrader.com/SB for more. All right, let's take you back to the floor of Podcast Movement, where I was having an awesome conversation with Lacey Langford, Mindy Jensen, and our new Australian friend, Glenn James. Well, let's talk then, sir, about your millennial audience. What are they talking to you about right now?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you asked about the stock market for maybe a more mature audience. Millennials, on balance, they want to establish their life. And generally speaking, the biggest struggles that they've got is probably personal cash flow and day-to-day money management. Also, with the new micro-investing platforms that are out there and they hear their friends are investing and investing is sexy, they want to also invest. So there's this dance between I've got to pay off some debt from another life, but I also want to invest. And I can't keep saving money because I keep spending it. So it goes back to a cash flow problem. So that's kind of the round and round circular thing that we see. It's like I've got a good income, I've got goals, I try and save for those goals. I want to invest. Oh, but I'm in debt. And it just keeps going around and around. And I think a lot of it, I always say, have a strategy, however small. And if that strategy is for the next 6 months, I'm only doing this, then I'll do that and then flow into that.
So, yeah, but where does that strategy start? You're a financial advisor. What do you start with?
Yeah, it's got to be the foundation. It's got to be cleaning up your bad debt, any debt that you've got that isn't one, tax deductible, or two, back behind an asset that's growing. And three, the second thing is, if you don't know how much it costs you to exist, that's the first problem. So everybody comes to a financial advisor, oh, I want to invest, I want to do sexy stuff. That's cute, but how much can you save a year? If we don't know that, we've got to work on that.
I'm laughing because when I was a financial advisor a decade ago and before, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
Everybody comes in, let's talk about investments. Let's talk about your budget and building a cash reserve. And you can see them go, oh no.
Yeah. So I take people through, if you can, let's go on a journey. You want to go on a journey?
Oh boy.
Yeah. Picture this. It's a house. Okay. on the roof of the house, and I'm doing the YMCA T thing or whatever. No, it's a upside down V.
Yes.
That house is your investing. It might be your property, your share portfolio, okay? People come to the financial advisor wanting to do the sexy stuff, which is the roof of the house. The middle bit of the house, so like the square, if it was me drawing it, with the bricks and the windows, they're all your goals. So it might be, we want to start a business, we want to pay off the mortgage, we want to put the kids through college, we might want to get a helicopter license. The slab of the house is our, we call it superannuation in Australia, or retirement savings, which in Australia, you get a compulsory 9.5% into super. So basically, if you've got a job in Australia, you've got super. So under the house, I draw four foundations. The first one, debt-free and cash reserve. The second foundation, a good spending plan. The third foundation, your protection plan. So you might have your disability insurances, your life insurances. And the fourth foundation is the wills and the estate plan.
Yeah.
So the reason I developed this, because I had 31-year-old people coming into my office. Oh, I've got four houses. I still live at home. I've got a car loan. Living a total false economy. Because if something changed in their life, the roof will crumble because they've built this heavy, big roof with heavy walls with no foundation.
That's a great analogy. I love that analogy.
That's a journey.
That's really cool.
Yeah, we went there.
We went there.
We didn't even need to eat anything cool to go there.
Dude, I was there. I was at the house. And the roof was going to fall, man.
So
he was starting a fire. He was in there like warming up.
So we just got to... And you illustrate that to people because realistically, the money comes out of our cash flow. So the foundation basically produces money into the goals and also money into the roof, which is our investment. So the money can never stop.
Do you use a similar analogy? Because, I mean, the stuff he's talking about, I'm watching you nod because it's similar for military people.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, everything you said there, but backing up to that cycle, I feel like the service members get in this unhealthy cycle of the deployment money. So they run up a bunch of debt, they deploy, and then pay it off. And instead of actually, you know, getting out of debt before you deploy, and then taking that money and investing it.
They're running into debt because they know they're going to get more money in the future. They're betting on future income.
Yes. And it's where it's going to have an epic failure is when they retire or separate from the military and you no longer have that bailout every 6 months to a year or 2 years. So it is that cycle. Yeah,
it catches up at some point. Likewise, if you do not exercise and you overeat, I'm talking about myself.
You've made a lot of references in this show. I just want to...
but how much is personal finance correlating to personal health? I mean, it's just, we all know how to get rid of this. I'm touching my beautiful food baby. I know how to get rid of this. I need to move my freaking ass and stop eating. We all know, but it's just, I need to put habits and behaviors in place.
You need to put effort into it. And
yeah, but that's so hard.
I know, it's really hard. It's so much easier to just sit here and say, oh yeah, I should do that.
You have to make it a priority. It has to be front and center in your life. And a lot of times people have too many priorities or juggling too many things instead of getting that one right in front of you, like you said before, both of you, and handling it, doing it well, and then moving to the next one.
Well, yes, talk about this, Mindy. Making it a priority. Like, how do you get motivated when it's so hard to get moving?
Oh, wow. I like how you direct that to me, Joe. Thanks. You know what? I have created, well, I didn't create, I joined a motivational group where Miss Mazuma and Slow Sip and Coffee and a bunch of other people are in this group where we are having a step challenge on our Fitbits. And having somebody else that I have to be accountability buddies. That's what we're called. I couldn't remember the name.
Accountability buddies.
Yes, that was Miss Mazuma made that word
I feel
word up.
Warm and fuzzy all of a sudden. Nice.
You want to join our group?
No.
We're doing it again
next
week.
That requires exercise. No deal.
But now, especially in the beginning, I had to be accountable. We have to show a screenshot of our steps from last week, and I have to get at least 10,000 a day. And it's really embarrassing to post that I didn't get it. And I have missed 3 weeks this year, and each one I am filled with shame when I type in 68,000 steps. I'm like, why didn't I get those extra two?
Yeah. Whatever you want to do, you are who you surround yourself with.
Yep.
Because I didn't run hardly at all. I mean, I ran a little bit before we moved to Texas. I went to Texas surrounded by people that ran marathons. I ran 11 in 10 years. Same thing. I mean, it just all of a sudden, they're all doing it. So it became a goal and started doing it and loved it. I mean, it totally.
You recently moved, Joe. Do you still run?
I do run, but what's funny is I don't run as diligently. And I'm trying to surround myself again, find that network of people to get back there. Because it's been easy some days to go, no, I'm taking a day off. I didn't used to take a day off. I'd do it every day.
Oh, it's so what we did. Easy to say no to running.
Yes.
But not a hard choice.
No. I would say following on from that, like absolutely you need an accountability. You need a community, whether it's this podcast, like your group on Facebook, Joe. Like you can't change unless you've hit rock bottom.
True.
So I just filmed a new module for a course and I drew a stick figure of like a guy laying in the well or a stick figure or a gal or whatever. If that's not you, stop right now because you're not ready because it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's hard work and you've just got to surround yourself with good people who are on the same page and know that enough's enough. Actually, I tell people like if you are ready, go and buy the last bloody thing on your credit card because that's it. Like, we are done from today. Get it out of your system. Go and do it.
Finish strong.
Why not?
OG says that. My co-host OG says that on all the time. He's like, well, before I lose weight, I need a starting point.
Exactly.
So he's like, dozen donuts.
Well, it was like that. There's a book about giving up smoking, and apparently it's a book or a DVD or something. And you've got to light a cigarette and smoke it while you read it. Like it's, yeah, Google it.
Just get it done.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a great, horrible place to leave it. We're going to leave it right there. Yeah. So let's go around the table and find out what's happening where you guys live. Lacey, what's coming up at the Military Money Show?
Coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about investing in the military community, how you can be better at that and not be so fearful of the things you don't know, like the terminology, concepts. You can let kind of go of your past money mistakes and not really hold yourself back from being able to do that. And also a lot of talk about real estate is coming up because in the military community, you're moving a lot. You have the opportunity to, you know, buy homes, rent them out. There's a lot of flexibility within that market. So those are some things that we're going to be chatting about.
Awesome. And Mindy, what's happening at Bigger Pockets Money?
We are starting to do a few really targeted episodes. I have a girl coming on, Melissa from The Roamer. She got pregnant when she was in college. And when she went to her advisor said, there's like, I don't know, a 0% chance of you graduating from college. You've kind of just ruined your life. She didn't say it like that, but she kind of said it like that. And she's like, well, no, I'm going to do it anyway. And she graduated college with a little baby. And she went into the engineering. I think she worked at SpaceX. Don't quote me because I can't remember. We haven't interviewed her yet.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited about the interview because her story shows just because you have made, and I don't want to call it a mistake because he's a lovely little boy.
Sure.
But you have an unexpected event happen in your life. That doesn't mean that your life is over. That doesn't mean that that is going to define you. And have you ever made a mistake, Lacey? I know, Joe, you're perfect. But, you know, have you ever had a mistake and you're like, oh.
My life's a mistake.
Where do I begin?
Glenn's thinking it's a mistake being here today.
Yeah. It's called brand reputation. You're not helping.
So, you know, you make these big mistakes, and at the time you're making them, that's all you can see. You're the small child in a sea of, you know, 6'9" guys. You're like, I can't see anything but this one thing that is all-consuming in my life right now. But that's not the end of your story. That's not the end of her story. And she's now financially, not financially independent, but she's financially independent-ish, where she can take mini retirements.
Yeah, I love that.
I mean, that's a big one. We've got several. Another woman is coming up. Her husband died, and now she's a single mom because this giant thing happened, and that didn't derail her plans.
So these unexpected journeys people are taking.
Thank you for summing it up much more succinctly than I did.
It was more succinct.
Well, he is a professional.
Wow.
Whoa.
Glenn is just aiming his gun at all
of
us.
You got a lot of daggers today.
What's happening? Yeah. Should I give you a second to take your foot out of the mouth? Or
yeah,
no?
Yeah.
What's going on at My Millennial Money?
So it's not a professional podcast like your show.
And he's pointing at Mindy.
Yeah. But hey, we've got some fun episodes coming up. We've got Dreams, Goals and Money, Airbnb for an investment property. This is a fun one. Cashing in on that juicy inheritance. Careers and Money, Part 1, Getting a New Job and Resume Tips. Careers and Money Part 2, How to Ask for a Pay Rise. We're doing a two-part series on money and food, whether you've got no money or no time. We've got an episode about how to get out of debt, money mindset, getting your engagement on, getting your wedding on, starting a business. We're going to go back and explain the GFC for people. We've got a lot of fun coming up.
The GFC?
Yeah. Good fried chicken.
I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
Love it.
I thought it was good chicken.
Yes.
No?
And as I say on my podcast, okay, bye.
And that's going to do it. As Glenn runs away.
All right, Doug, take it from here. What should we have learned today?
So what should we have learned today? First, take some advice from Lacey Langford. Whether you're in the military or not, think about different ways you can be location independent. The next time you're forced to move for work, you might be able to keep a second income stream going to add some stability to your wallet. Second, take some advice from Glenn James. Build your financial plan like you'd build a house. Start with a basic foundation and not just the fun investing part, and you'll be much more likely to reach your goals. But the big lesson? Who let Joe go to Orlando without the rest of us? Hey, we expect a t-shirt, Joe, or at least some of that Dole Whip from Disney World. Well, that'd probably melt on the plane, but definitely the t-shirt. I want the t-shirt. Special thanks to Mindy Jensen from the Bigger Pockets Money podcast for joining us. You'll find Bigger Pockets Money wherever you're listening to this show. You'll also find Glenn James's project, My Millennial Money, wherever you're hearing this. Thanks to him for hanging out with us today. And finally, if you're in the military, be sure to check out Lacey Langford's podcast, The Military Money Show. Thanks to Lacey for her help on today's show. This show was created by Joe Saul-Sehy, produced by Richie Rutter-Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. Online, visit us on Twitter at SBenjaminsCast or on our Facebook page. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I just noticed it's just as dark and damp down here as Joe's soul. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And lastly, thanks to Joe's mom for sending Joe out of the basement for the day. He made some new friends, and everyone knows that Joe could use a friend or two. God, that guy's lonely.
Welcome to the after show. This is the part of the show that doesn't exist. It's kind of weird doing an after show here in like a big room because people might know it exists. A little awkward. So guys, pretend like we're doing the regular show, not the after show. Mindy.
Yes, Joe.
You discovered a new emoji at Bigger Pockets headquarters.
Yes, I did, Joe.
And you guys, so what do you talk through? Like Slack? Is it Slack?
Yeah, we use Slack.
Yeah, so Slack, I mean, Slack's been a sponsor of the show, but for people that don't know Slack, it's integrated messaging with different channels.
Instant messaging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But you can share files, share ideas, and it's all according to what team you're on and whatever. But yes. They have emojis.
They have emojis. You can make customized emojis, and they also have some like random ones that are already there.
Yeah, so you find all the smiley stuff, the hearts, but then you find there's this random emoji that's a...
It is an eggplant.
And I thought,
that's very funny. Why is there an eggplant there? I don't do a lot of cooking with eggplants. I don't use a lot of eggplants in my life. This is just going to be bad the whole time.
Or do you?
Well, the answer is she had no idea.
So I thought it was funny. Do you want to give a shout out to them?
I took a photo of a billboard the other day, and there's a big eggplant on there. I don't know why they've got vegetables on the billboard, but it's got grinding.
But it caught your eye.
Caught my eye when I see big eggplant. Gets me going. For food, love food. FreeSTDCheck.org. Check yourself before you wreck yourself, people.
Yes, so that actually plays into this story just a bit. Foreshadowing. So I started using this emoji as a comment whenever anybody would say something funny. Instead of putting a smile face, I would throw up an eggplant.
Everybody's like, Mindy's my kind of girl.
Because it was fun and different.
Because it was
the new kid at work's like, Mindy's so loose, love it.
Mindy's so free.
And after, I will say, probably 12 to 18 months of throwing up eggplants.
12 to 18 months?
Yes. One of the ladies at work sent me a very private message. She said, you know what that means, don't you? I'm like, what are you talking about? She said, you know what the eggplant emoji means, don't you? And I said, it's just an eggplant. She said, no, it's not just an eggplant.
Oh, no, my friend. Oh, no.
And did you ever send the eggplant with, like, water? It's like I'm washing the eggplant.
No, I did not. I was informed of that afterwards, but I was so embarrassed that I had been, I mean, this was on every channel and all over the place. And frankly, I can't believe that HR didn't come talk to me about it. But I said, hey, I was just informed of what eggplant really means. And I'm very sorry if I offended anybody.
Like, I'm a late bloomer.
And that one freak in the company was all of a sudden disappointed.
Right. I did get a message from another employee, like, I just thought you were really bold. No, I'm just really clueless.
But hold on. That's not the only thing Mindy has done. Mindy was recently watching some Netflix.
Joe Saul-Sehy was on the Bigger Pockets Money podcast. And at the end of the episode, I invited him to Netflix and chill.
Seems reasonable. What can I say?
Welcoming.
Yes, very welcoming. And then the episode aired. My editor did not take it out because why would he? I'm inviting Joe over to my house to watch Netflix and chill out at the end of a very long week, or so I thought. And then one of the guys that I work with comes into the office after having listened to the episode, which was now out for everybody in the world to hear. And he's like, you know what Netflix and chill means, right? I'm like, yeah, it means to come over to my house and, like, watch a movie. He's like, that's not what it means. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, you said that on that podcast today. I'm like, then he explained to me what it meant. So,
not much Netflix going on.
Not much Netflix or chilling, if you're doing it right, apparently.
She sent me this request to Netflix and chill with an eggplant.
With an eggplant emoji. At the end.
Holy cow.
I feel like you're going to get a personal session with HR.
Yes. I don't know what you guys are doing up here, but...
Glenn's like, I'm staying. I am not going back to the island.
So I'm going to throw my co-host, Scott Trench, under the bus. Scott Trench was filling in on the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Investing podcast. And we have a quick tip at the beginning of every show. And the two hosts will say, quick tip. And on this particular episode, Scott did not say quick. He only said the word tip. And then afterwards he said, oh, I came in there just the tip.
Your podcast is sounding a lot funner.
Holy cow. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to tell that one.
No.
But
I don't want my dad. Steve, I don't want to.
Yes. I'll throw my co-host under the bus from our other show, Money with Friends, Bobby Rebel. Very great woman, a fantastic co-host. We were doing a story because that show, for people that don't listen to that show, is current headlines, and we kind of talk about what they mean to you. And it was all about Disney has this new subscription service to compete against Netflix and Hulu and everybody else.
and HBO. So she's on the show, and she said, she's like, well, the great thing about this, Joe, is now you, it's not just Netflix and chill. Now you can HBO and chill, Hulu and chill, you can Disney and chill. And she's going down the line. I'm just trying to keep a straight face because we do that show live on video. Bobby has no idea what that means.
Maybe Bobby and I should do a show together and we'll just entendre after double entendre the whole way through.
Perfect storm.
Well, I hope you got a lot out of today's episode. But one thing that we talked about a little bit today, but we talk about a lot, is you got to have good partners on your team, Stackers. And you know what? Navy Federal Credit Union could be that partner, because becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. And aren't those two of the big tenets, right? Have a debt strategy, earn more, save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. I think that's the coolest certificate. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt. Well, as you're putting your plan together, you want to also have a debt strategy, right? You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing cost, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Don't get in over your head with debt. Make sure you have a great strategy and then take out debt as you need it. And Navy Federal's options certainly give you the flexibility to help you make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, equal housing lender, membership required, terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.